Good morning. My name is Jessica, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Fifth Third Bank second quarter 2014 earnings call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the call over to Jim Eglseder, Director of Investor Relations. You may begin your conference.
Thanks, Jessica. Good morning. Today, we'll be talking with you about our second quarter 2014 results. This discussion may contain certain forward-looking statements about Fifth Third pertaining to our financial condition, results of operations, plans, and objectives. These statements involve certain risks and uncertainties. There are a number of factors that could cause results to differ materially from historical performance and these statements. We've identified some of these factors in our forward-looking cautionary statement at the end of our earnings release and in other materials, and we encourage you to review them. Fifth Third undertakes no obligation and would not expect to update any such forward-looking statements after the date of this call. I'm joined on the call today by several people, our CEO, Kevin Kabat, and CFO, Tayfun Tuzun, Frank Forrest, Chief Risk and Credit Officer, and Treasurer, Jamie Leonard. During the question and answer period, please provide your name and that of your firm to the operator. With that, I'll turn the call over to Kevin Kabat. Kevin?
Thanks, Jim. Morning, everyone. We reported second quarter net income to common shareholders of $416 million and earnings per diluted share of $0.49. Results included a $125 million gain on the sale of Vantive shares, a $63 million positive valuation on the Vantive warrant, litigation reserve charges of $61 million, and a few other items that Tayfun will cover. In total, these items benefited EPS in the quarter by approximately $0.06. Economic data has improved throughout the quarter, and the economy appears to be moving in a positive direction after a weak first quarter. Although housing activity was slower than expected, new job formation should continue to help households increase their spending while they further improve their balance sheets. We are also at a point in this cycle where we would expect to see capital expenditures pick up after a lengthy period where business investment has not been strong. Our overall financials are in line with and reflect the current state of the markets, regulatory environment, and economic activity. Given this background, I'm pleased with our results and believe that we'll continue to grow our company profitably as conditions continue to improve. The strategies that we have executed, including our deposit simplification project and diversified investments in corporate banking, as well as ongoing activities such as the enhancements to our retail banking approach, are together producing very good results in this environment and will be a differentiating factor for Fifth Third now and in the future. Loan growth remained solid despite relatively cautious customer demand. Average portfolio loans grew $1 billion sequentially and $3.8 billion from last year. Growth was driven by C&I, which was up 2% sequentially and 10% compared with last year. The sequential increase in commercial line utilization from 30% to 32% is an encouraging sign indicative of the relative improvement in the economic environment. Commercial real estate balances continue to trend up, increasing 2% from last quarter as a result of growth in construction balances. NII was up 1% sequentially and 2% from the prior year as asset growth continues to offset the negative effect of loan repricing. I'm pleased with our ability to grow net interest income during this prolonged low interest rate environment. We continue to generate solid core deposit growth, which was up 1% compared with last quarter, driven by 5% growth in consumer savings and money market balances. Year-over-year core deposits were up 9%, driven by 16% growth in commercial core deposit balances. Continued growth in core deposits is a sign of the strength of our retail deposit franchise and the growing scale and scope of our commercial relationships. Operating results were highlighted by card and processing revenue, up 11% sequentially and 12% from a year ago, driven by increased transaction volume and card utilization. Additionally, service charges on deposits were up 5% sequentially, and corporate banking revenue was up 3% sequentially. Our results this quarter benefited from the sale of a portion of our ownership stake in Vantive, as well as a positive mark on the warrant that we hold. Our combined stake in Vantive is uniquely valuable with significant remaining capacity. As we've said before, strategically, we'll continue to reduce our ownership in the best interest of our shareholders. Quarterly expenses were flat sequentially and were down 8% from the prior year. Elevated litigation-related expenses prevented a larger decline this quarter. If you exclude the litigation charges in all periods, non-interest expense was down 1% sequentially and 9% from the prior year. Going forward, we'll maintain our focus on expense management as you would expect from us, while we continue to invest in our infrastructure and business lines to support long-term sustainable growth. Credit results were stronger during the quarter as expected, with net charge-offs of 45 basis points. These charge-off levels are in line with what we'd expect at this point in the credit cycle and with our overall credit metrics. Non-performing asset levels were down 12% sequentially and 28% from last year, and our non-performing asset ratio declined below 100 basis points for the first time since the third quarter of 2007. Capital levels remain very strong. Our Tier 1 common ratio was 9.6% on a Basel I basis, and 9.3% pro forma for U.S. Basel III rules. And our Tier 1 capital ratio increased 35 basis points to 10.8%. During the quarter, we conducted several actions under our 2014 capital plan, including raising our quarterly common dividend by 8% and entering into an agreement to repurchase $150 million of common stock. Additionally, we issued $300 million of perpetual preferred stock during the quarter. Our tangible book value grew 9% year over year. Our capital generation and our overall capital position give us the ability to support balance sheet growth while continuing to return capital to shareholders in a prudent manner. Along with very good financial results, I want to highlight the positive impact we're having in our communities. We were recently recognized by the Gallup organization for our commitment to employee engagement, diversity, and inclusion. Gallup noted the consistent investment we've made in these areas and the benefit it's had for employees and customers. Our innovative partnerships with NextJob and Stand Up to Cancer have been a success story recognized publicly. We were the first in the industry to partner with NextJob to offer job coaching services to our unemployed mortgage borrowers. We're now running a re-employment marketing campaign, which leverages the power of social media to help job seekers reach prospective employers. Our partnership with Stand Up to Cancer led to the introduction of branded credit and debit cards that direct donations to the organization for every qualifying purchase made with those cards. We're the only card issuer to offer these affinity products, and we're seeing real benefits from the relationship, including better retention and higher cross-sell with these customers. In addition, we surpassed the $2 million mark for donations to Stand Up for Cancer since this partnership began last year. Efforts like these make a real difference to our customers and the communities where we live and work, and you can expect to see more innovative approaches from us in line with our focus on growing relationships with value-added offerings. We have a role in enhancing the lives of our employees and customers, and we take that responsibility seriously as we make our business decisions. Overall, I'm pleased with our results this quarter. We remain focused on the things we can control to differentiate results: lending and deposit generation, business execution, and disciplined expense management. With that, let me turn it over to Tayfun now to discuss operating results in more detail and give some comments about our outlook. Tayfun?
Thanks, Kevin. Good morning, and thank you for joining us. The financial summary on page 4 of the presentation notes some highlights from the quarter. We reported net income to common shareholders of $416 million, or 49 cents per diluted share. Second quarter earnings included the following items that in total benefited results by approximately 6 cents. The $125 million pre-tax gain on the sale of Vantive shares and $63 million positive valuation on the Vantive warrant were partially offset by $61 million in litigation reserve charges, a $17 million impairment charge on bank premises, a $16 million negative valuation adjustment on the Visa total return swap, and a $12 million negative impact on equity method earnings from our interest in Vantive related to the one-time impact of their acquisition of Mercury Payment Systems during the quarter. Earnings per share adjusted for these items were 43 cents a share, consistent with a similarly adjusted 43 cents in the first quarter. Our operating results were solid, reflecting the modest rebound in the economy following the weakness in the first quarter and some pickup in spending activity by businesses and consumers. Housing activity has been weaker than anticipated at the beginning of the year, and consumers are maintaining their conservative perspective on new leverage. The environment is challenging, but we remain committed to achieving positive operating leverage and prudently growing revenues. I'll start the detailed review with the average balance sheet and page 5 of the presentation. Average earning assets increased 2% sequentially, driven by higher investments and loan balances. In the second quarter, average investment securities increased by $1.3 billion, or 6% from the first quarter, reflecting $3.3 billion of purchases partially offset by sales of lower-yielding assets as we continue to optimize our liquidity position. Notably, since the second quarter of 2013, we've added $6.7 billion to the securities portfolio, increasing our investment portfolio as a percent of total assets from 13.5% a year ago to 17.6% at the end of the second quarter. With respect to our securities portfolio, the absolute level of rates creates an environment that is only marginally attractive beyond the LCR-driven activity. For the remainder of 2014, we expect total interest earning assets to grow more in line with average loan growth. Shifting to loans, average portfolio loans increased $1 billion, or 1% from the first quarter. Sequential growth was driven by a $1.1 billion increase in commercial loan balances, with 2% growth each in C&I and commercial real estate. C&I balances reflected line utilization of 32%, up from 30% in the first quarter, which was partially offset by runoff and paydown activity. Higher average CRE balances were driven by growth in commercial construction balances for the sixth consecutive quarter, partially offset by lower commercial mortgage balances. New commercial loan production was up 29% from the first quarter. Slightly more than half of the new production was through our large corporate, mid-corporate, and structured finance segments. Commensurate with our strong presence in Midwestern states, a little more than 20% of new production represented loans to the manufacturing industry. Average consumer loans were flat on a linked quarter basis, as runoff in home equity balances continues to offset modest growth in other consumer loan categories. On the deposit side, average core deposits increased $1.3 billion in the second quarter, primarily driven by consumer money market account growth. Importantly, we continue to grow net new accounts, and our customers are holding higher average balances. Our current cross-sell ratio in retail is about 5.5 products per consumer checking household, which is up from before our deposit simplification changes, and we believe that we can improve this already strong household penetration level going forward. It's been a full year since we completed the final leg of the conversion of our consumer deposit account offerings to a more simplified platform, and it's clearly having the intended results, both in terms of consumer deposit behavior as well as fee income, which I'll touch on in a minute. But first, taking a look at NII on page 6 of the presentation. Taxable equivalent net interest income increased $7 million sequentially to $905 million, driven by interest earning asset growth, including loan growth and a $1.3 billion increase in average investment securities balances, as well as an additional day in the second quarter. These benefits offset the negative effects of loan repricing and higher interest expense associated with debt issuances over the last two quarters. The net interest margin was 315 basis points, down 7 basis points from the first quarter as expected. The effects of loan repricing, debt issuances, and day count were partially offset by higher yields on investment securities. Shifting to fees on page 7 of the presentation. Second quarter non-interest income was $736 million, compared with $564 million last quarter. Vantiv again provided the most significant sequential impact, with a $125 million gain on the sale of shares and a $63 million positive warrant valuation, partially offset by a $12 million negative impact to equity method of income from our interest in Vantive that related to certain charges they recognized as a result of the acquisition of Mercury Payment Systems in June. Excluding the Vantive items in both quarters, the decline in fee income was due to lower mortgage banking net revenue, a $17 million negative valuation adjustment for land upon which we no longer expect to build branches, and a $16 million negative valuation adjustment on the Visa total return swap. We've previously described the work we're doing in the retail bank around our distribution network and the impact of changing consumer preferences. As part of our ongoing effort to optimize our retail distribution strategy, we continually evaluate the composition of our branch network and land parcels. In the second quarter, we determined that a number of properties we had originally intended for future banking centers no longer meet our targets. Based on the appraisals we've received, we booked a $17 million impairment charge in the quarter to reduce their carrying value to estimated fair value. Moving on to line item results within fee income, starting with mortgage banking revenue. Residential mortgage originations increased to $2 billion with 70% purchase volume as we benefited from the uptick from spring buying season, partially offset by the impact of our decision to exit the broker origination business in March. If we exclude broker originations from the first and second quarter numbers, originations increased 36% linked quarter. Despite higher originations, mortgage banking net revenue declined sequentially, due entirely to a $32 million swing on net servicing asset valuation adjustments, which were a negative $26 million this quarter compared with positive $6 million in the first quarter. Other components of mortgage banking revenue were more stable, with gains on mortgages sold up 3%, reflecting the higher origination volume. Gain on sale margins declined 4 basis points sequentially to 238 basis points, and servicing fees were flat sequentially at $62 million. Investment advisory fees were also strong this quarter. You don't see this sequentially as the first quarter is seasonally strong, but the business showed 4% growth year over year, benefiting from a 10% increase in personal assets under management, as well as higher market values. Card and processing revenue and service charges on deposits rebounded from a seasonally light first quarter, up $8 million and $6 million respectively, but also showed growth compared with last year. 12% growth in card and processing revenue from a year ago reflected progress on our goal to increase the number of cards our customers have and the utilization of those cards, as well as higher consumer purchase volume. Year-over-year growth in deposit service charges of 2% was driven by a 7% increase in commercial deposit fees as we continue to drive deeper relationships on that side of the business. Our results demonstrate the progress we've made in forming new customer relationships as well as selling new products and services to existing customers. The positive results in our deposit fees show that our fee revenue growth strategies in both consumer and business segments based on innovative, value-added products and services are achieving the intended outcome. Corporate banking revenue increased 3% sequentially with a pickup in syndication fees and foreign exchange fees. Growth of 1% from a year ago was driven by higher syndication fees and institutional sales revenue, given our focus on increasing lead-left relationships to better position ourselves to earn a greater share of our customers' non-credit business. In sum, our core fee income performance held strong despite the challenging revenue environment. We've done a good job of driving long-term profitability in our core businesses while overcoming the impact of businesses that we've exited, like the broker mortgage business. The other side of the equation is our commitment to expense discipline. Non-interest expense, shown on page 8 of the presentation, was $954 million this quarter, compared with $950 million in the first quarter. Expense results included $61 million in litigation reserve charges, higher than we expected, as regulatory and litigation costs remain a headwind, which you can see in recent announcements from other peers. We would expect these charges to decline from these levels, although it's hard to predict when that will happen. Excluding litigation charges, adjusted expenses were well controlled and were $893 million, which is down $6 million sequentially when normalized for the first quarter litigation charge as well. This sequential decline reflected lower benefits expense from seasonally high first quarter levels and was partially offset by higher long-term incentives that were paid in the quarter. Our FTE count declined 2% from the first quarter. We did see higher card and processing expense sequentially in line with the higher revenue earned in that business during the quarter. All other lines look good, and we remain pleased with our ability to manage our core expense levels. PPNR shown on page 9 of the presentation was $682 million. When adjusted for the items noted on the slide, PPNR was $593 million, up slightly from the first quarter adjusted PPNR, the result of NII performance and the core expense discipline I just mentioned. The efficiency ratio adjusted on the same basis was approximately 60% for the quarter. Turning to credit results on page 10. Total net charge-offs of $101 million decreased $67 million sequentially, with a $57 million decline in commercial net charge-offs and a $10 million decline in consumer net charge-offs. As we expected, net charge-offs of 45 basis points of average loans and leases returned to trend. Total delinquencies remained low at $337 million. Non-performing assets of $832 million at quarter-end were down $114 million from the first quarter, bringing the NPA ratio to 92 basis points, its lowest level in 7 years. Commercial NPLs of $396 million declined 15% sequentially and reflects overall improved financial results in several large relationships, as well as a lower level of inflows. As you know, the SNC exam has been a topic of interest given the public discussion during the quarter. Results are generally communicated to banks in the second quarter. While I can't get further into specifics, the results we received were very much in line with our own internal assessments, and we don't currently expect any material impacts next quarter related to the exam. Wrapping up on credit, the allowance for loan and lease losses declined $25 million sequentially, and reserve coverage remains solid at 1.61% of loans and leases. I'd reiterate that future changes in our reserves will increasingly reflect loan growth more than the change in credit profile of the overall portfolio. The pace of reserve releases slowed this quarter, and I anticipate that trend to continue. Turning to capital on slide 11. Capital levels continue to be strong and well above regulatory requirements. The Tier 1 Common Equity Ratio was 9.6%, up 10 basis points from last quarter, and the Tier 1 capital ratio increased 35 basis points to 10.8%. During the quarter, we announced an 8% increase in the quarterly common dividend to 13 cents per share, as well as common stock repurchases of $150 million. The average diluted share count is down another 1% sequentially and is the lowest we've seen since the end of 2010. We also issued $300 million of preferred Series J, which brings the total amount of preferred stock in Tier 1 capital to $1.3 billion, or 111 basis points of risk-weighted assets. Just so you have it for your models, the Series J issuance carries a semi-annual dividend, which would normally be about $7 million every quarter, starting in September. However, this will be about $5 million in the third quarter as a result of the shorter first dividend period. Similarly, our Series H issuance carries a semi-annual dividend, which would be about $15 million every other quarter, paid in June and December, and the Series I issuance carries a $7.5 million quarterly dividend. Therefore, our third quarter preferred dividend should be $12 million, and then it should resume its normal alternating pattern of $22.5 million the fourth quarter, $15 million the first quarter, and so on. Now turning to the outlook on page 12. We've updated parts of the slide to reflect any changes to our full-year expectations. As in the past, comparisons exclude the impact of any gains on Vantive share sales and changes in warrant value in 2014 and 2013, as indicated in the footnote on the slide. Our NII, NIM, and balance sheet expectations are unchanged. I'll start with net interest income. We expect full year 2014 NII to increase from full year 2013 NII of $3.6 billion in the 2% growth range. The key drivers of the 2014 growth are loan growth and higher investment securities balances, partially offset by increased funding costs and some additional loan spread compression. We still expect NII to trend up throughout the year. We anticipate a full-year NIM in the 315 basis points range, plus or minus, again unchanged from prior guidance, as we continue to evaluate our LCR position and see continued effects of repricing. Our NII guidance includes the impact of the decision we made earlier this year to limit the availability of our deposit advance product to existing customers. We continue to evaluate possible banking solutions that would be appropriate for a potentially wider segment of customers. We are reviewing alternative options to offer products and services to these customers, taking into account their needs and preferences. We would also aim for any transition plans to minimize disruption for our customers. It is critical that we get this right, utilizing the time we have to do so. We'll inform you of our plans as we conclude these reviews. Although the outcome will depend on the final product design and customer usage, the revenues will be considerably lower than our existing deposit advance product, but the outcome will depend on the final product design and customer usage. Turning to loan growth, we still expect mid-single-digit growth for the full year, primarily driven by growth in C&I and commercial real estate. These increases will be partially offset by declines in residential mortgage balances and continued runoff in the home equity portfolio. We continue to expect a mid-single-digit increase in deposits driven by both commercial and consumer. Moving on to overall fee income and expense expectations for 2014. As a reminder, these comparisons exclude $534 million in 2013 fee income related to gains on Vantive sales and changes in the warrant value. Our 2014 guidance, likewise, excludes any effect from these Vantive items. Largely reflecting the current mortgage environment and our exit from the broker channel, we currently expect a low double-digit decline in total fee income in 2014 compared with adjusted fee income in 2013, which includes negative impact from the charges to Vantive equity method income and bank-owned land we discussed earlier, totaling $29 million. We would expect mortgage banking to remain relatively flat versus the second quarter for the remainder of the year. Excluding mortgage, we expect fees to grow in the mid-single digits range in aggregate versus 2013, with growth in all other major fee categories. Within this guidance, based on the timing of some categories, we expect fee income trends to accelerate in the fourth quarter, which also will benefit from the TRA payment that we expect to receive from Vantive. Looking at the details within fees, we'd expect to see low single-digit percentage growth in deposit fees, although commercial service charges are growing at a mid-single-digit pace. We expect investment advisory revenue growth in the mid-single-digits range, with strong growth in our asset management fees and more moderate growth in brokerage income. And we expect corporate banking revenue growth in the 10% range, with a bulk of the growth in the fourth quarter. This is slightly below our previous guidance, driven by low volatility in the market, which is having a negative impact on derivative and foreign exchange volumes. We are increasing our expectations for card and processing revenue growth to be in the high single digits range. Turning to expenses, we expect full year non-interest expense to be down in the mid-single digits range, perhaps about 5% relative to reported 2013 expenses. We currently expect expenses in the third quarter to be up slightly from the $893 million core expenses we reported in the second quarter, excluding any unforeseen one-time items. As always, we remain committed to managing our expenses in line with revenue trends while maintaining appropriate investments in the company to build future revenue streams and risk infrastructure in light of the changing business and regulatory environment. Overall, we still expect to achieve positive core operating leverage in 2014, excluding Vantive, We expect PPNR to be relatively stable for the year compared with 2013, and we still expect the efficiency ratio to move below 60% in the second half of the year. As for taxes, we expect the full year 2014 effective tax rate to be in the 27%-27.5% range. Turning to credit. Our outlook for full-year net charge-offs is relatively unchanged and remains around 50 basis points for the year. We still expect a significant decline in NPAs, down about 15% from last year's levels, further reducing the NPA ratio. With respect to loan loss reserves, we continue to expect the benefit of improvement in credit results to be partially offset by new reserves related to loan growth. All in, we produced another solid quarter. This is a tough, competitive environment where the focus is clearly on execution, and we'll continue to drive towards improving performance where we feel we can do better. That wraps up my remarks. Jessica, can you open the line for questions, please?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. Your first question comes from Ken Zerbe from Morgan Stanley. Your line is now open.
Just in terms of the deposit advance product, looking at yields, looks like they're down about 4 percentage points this quarter to about 35 basis points. Has anything changed in terms of your expectation for how quickly that does run off? And just to be super clear, all of that runoff is already, or is it already included in your current guidance? Thanks.
Yes. The progress on EAX this year is included in our guidance. I would say that the behavior, customer behavior is relatively in the range of our expectations. It is not a whole lot different from where we expected when we made the announcement earlier this year.
Understood. And you guys have not, well, do you have an estimate in terms of timing of when you might come up with an alternative product?
We are working on it, Ken. Clearly, you know, it's a pretty complex process. You know, we know, obviously, that some agencies have provided guidance. Others are working on it. There is no full clarity. And I think, you know, we have, obviously, a group of people working on it. And, you know, we will be working on it for the remainder of the year. And we'll share the updates with you as soon as, you know, we have more clarity. But I think it will take a number of months before we can clarify, you know, where we're going.
All right. And then last question, just in terms of the litigation charges, I guess Fifth Third is not one of the banks I normally think about having high litigation expense. But can you give us any more color in terms of what's driving those expenses and, you know, whether there's any kind of resolution in sight on that? Thanks.
I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to give you more details than what is in our filings. I mean, you can go to our latest 10-Q filing and look at the items that we discussed. It's environmental. We're dealing with similar issues that other banks are dealing with. And we expect these litigation charges, obviously, to end. And we don't necessarily have a clear path to the, you know, calendar time when it will end. But the issues that we're dealing with are not a lot different from the issues that other peer banks are dealing with.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Paul Miller from FBR Capital Markets. Your line is now open.
Hi. This is Jessica Ribner for Paul. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Thank you. We have one question just on the mortgage banking side of the business. You know, how are you addressing the segment as a whole and, you know, with what's going on in the market that we're looking at probably a sub-$1 trillion market weighted towards purchase, but the purchase market hasn't come back like we thought? How are you thinking about that going forward?
Right. And we agree with you that our expectations coming to this year with respect to the spring and summer season were higher than what the actuals are coming out at. The volumes are lower. From our perspective, though, the other added element is we decided to exit the broker channel during the first quarter. That clearly is impacting our volumes. In terms of the remainder of this season and the remainder of the year, We're not expecting significant changes to our origination volumes. Our origination volumes, when you exclude the broker channel, are up, you know, at a very healthy level. Our pipeline, when you exclude, again, the impact of the broker channel, is actually up at a very healthy level, 30-plus percent as well. So we've lowered our expectations given the housing activity that we've seen over the past 2-3 months, and our guidance for the remainder of the year reflects that sort of a, more of a flat performance on the top-line revenues in that business.
Okay, and then just in terms of July, have you seen any upward trends from the second quarter?
In terms of just mortgage or overall?
In terms of mortgage.
Similar trends, you know, the once you get it late into the season, these trends don't necessarily change much month over month. So I would say that what you're seeing out with respect to housing data is probably reflective of what we're seeing.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Erika Najarian from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Your line is now open.
Yes, good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
My first question is, in terms of your progress, or if you prefer, what inning you are in terms of reaping potential savings from your retail distribution resizing, sort of where are you on your progress? And, you know, as we think about 2015, we appreciate certainly the guidance for the efficiency ratio in the second half, but if the interest rate environment doesn't change, is there enough potential savings left in the till to continue to drive the efficiency ratio down further next year?
I believe that there is more room in our expenses. Clearly, we've been very focused in looking at the revenue trends and looking at the future of our businesses with and without an increase in the interest rate environment. And our efforts so far have produced very good results. Now, in terms of the retail business, the demographic trends and the customer usage trends are changing very rapidly. So we end up adjusting our expectations continuously as every month's data comes in with respect to how heavily customers are using the digital channels. Now, we're up over 30% now in terms of the total deposit transactions that are coming through the ATMs and the mobile app. And also our pilot projects with respect to the design of our branches, with respect to the type of employment that we have in those branches, are producing good results as well. There is going to be more room as we continue to invest in technology. And as the customers are also likely to exceed our expectations as to how they interact with us. Going back to what that means for efficiency ratio, just even sort of beyond 2015, we've always said that, you know, where we are as a company, 55% efficiency ratio with, you know, some help from the interest rate environment is very achievable. We continue to believe that. We will do our best to time the movement in the efficiency ratio along with, you know, the revenue patterns that we see. But for now, I think, you know, the fact that we are guiding to a sub-60% level for the second half of the year is pretty good given the rather subdued economic environment that we are seeing and sort of the challenges that we're facing, for example, with respect to mortgage revenues. I mean, that's we're pleased. I believe that there is more room, and we'll do our best to continue to produce those results.
Okay. Thank you for answering my question.
Next question comes from Keith Murray from ISI. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Just touching on the litigation expense, and I appreciate you can't give too much specific information, but just curious if the increase is related to new items or changes in existing items based on what you've seen in, you know, other settlements, et cetera.
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not going to be able to give you more details, really, than what we have in the queue. I mean, we will be updating, obviously, our 10-Q filing here shortly. If there's any updates, we're going to communicate that via queue.
Okay. And then just back on the deposit advance products, can you just explain the revenue dynamic for 14? So let's assume, for argument's sake, you don't have a replacement product in place by the beginning of 15. Would there be like a cliff decline in revenue in the first quarter of 15 as you phase out at the end of 14? Just how does that work?
Yeah, as you know, in my discussion at the beginning of this call, I mentioned that we are working both on what the product or, you know, the set of products and services is going to look like, as well as, you know, how we're going to manage the transition period as we intend to avoid an abrupt disruption to the delivery to our customers. So more to come on that as we get closer to the end of the year.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from Matt O'Connor from Deutsche Bank. Your line is now open.
Hey, guys, good morning. This is Dan Dalmaro from Matt's team.
Good morning.
Good morning. If you could just comment on the commercial pricing trends that you're seeing and your expectations for that going forward. It seems like utilization was up a little bit this quarter for on the commercial side, and what do you think that means for C&I growth?
Let me answer the second part of your question. We typically don't have aggressive assumptions on utilization rates because we don't really see an abrupt increase in economic activity. So our guidance really does not rely much on continuing tick-ups in utilization rates. In terms of pricing, it continues to be competitive. The segments that we are growing, mid-corp and large corp, are very attractive segments for all banks, and we expect that environment to continue. It likely is not going to change much. The other part, you know, from our perspective is we are continuously booking commercial loans of better credit profile compared to previous periods. And so from a new yield perspective, what you're seeing in our overall portfolio yield progress is impacted by that improving credit profile of new loans that are coming on the sheet. So in general, we have no expectations that this pricing environment is going to change much. We don't really, we've not built in any utilization rate increases into our outlook. Our production continues to be very strong. I looked at our production, new production patterns going back to the beginning of 2011. And if you take out Q4, because Q4 is always a very high origination volume quarter, this quarter's production beat 8 of the 11 quarters. So production patterns continue to be well. Just the refi and payoff activity is producing more subdued results from a just portfolio outstanding perspective. But we're pleased with, you know, the activity levels.
All right, thank you. Could you just remind us of the pace of the contingent tax liability going forward?
In terms of dollars, dollar payments?
Dollars and timing.
The timing is... you're talking about Vantiv, I'm assuming.
Yep.
Okay. So the timing is going to be Q4. As we've discussed, this is a very long series of contingent cash flows, you know, upwards of 15 years. When you look at Vantiv's filings, based on what they disclosed, the Q4 amount is about $23 million.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Brian Foran from Autonomous. Your line is now open.
Hi. So I guess not to beat a dead horse on this deposit advance, but is it fair to say, if I hear you right, you know, it's in the 14 outlook, but it's also kind of slowly starting to bleed down. And as we look to 15, you have to do the review on the replacement products, but you kind of referenced any replacement product, maybe fewer customers would qualify in the ability to repay. Maybe there'd be a little bit higher underwriting expense going along with it. So is it right to think, you know, it's annualizing maybe $125 million, I think, of revenue right now? And, you know, maybe as we look to 15, for those of us that kind of have to put something in the model, maybe haircut it by half or something? I mean, is that – clearly that half is my estimate, not yours, but is it right to think that 15 has a step down kind of regardless of what the outcome of the review is, and it's just a question of how much that step down is?
Look, I mean, I think, you know, we've not provided guidance with respect to 15 on specific percentage terms. The other thing that I want to clarify is we believe that ultimately the solution needs to be evaluated as more of a different nature of products and services rather than just a one-for-one product substitution, because the nature of the offer is going to be broader. We're looking at, you know, a package of different products and services that this segment is going to need, and we're designing our offer relative to that type of demand. What's difficult is ultimately it is the new offer or bundle of products and services is going to address a most likely a wider segment of customers than the set of customers who are using our existing EAX product. So part of the change in the revenues and profits tied to this is going to depend on that widening of the customer base. Whether the number is, you know, 50%, 60% lower, I don't have, you know, enough information. If I had, I would have given you that guidance today. But in terms of there's going to be at the end of 2014, we'll update you guys on that progress. But clearly, the change in the revenue line item in 15 is going to be reflective of a more discrete change on revenues that are coming through that line.
That's very helpful. On the commercial side, I guess two numbers that I was grappling with. One on the NPL inflows. Clearly, there's kind of a walk back in most credit metrics this quarter, which is good news. The NPL inflows have been a little higher, kind of as a run rate if I smooth out over the past couple of quarters. So I wonder if you could just talk broadly about the commercial credit cycle and whether you think we're bouncing along the trough or whether you think we're starting kind of a process of normalization, fully realizing that there were, you know, some unusual credits last quarter, let's call them. And then secondly, I think you mentioned the commercial core deposit growth was up 16% year over year. I guess regardless of whether that number's right, more broadly, as you think about commercial deposits, any ability you've had to parse apart how much of it is core customer growth, new accounts, things like that, versus how much of it you feel like might be excess liquidity sitting around because of the low rate cycle?
This is Frank Forrest. Let me take the first part of your question, and I'll let Typhoon answer the second part. On the NPL question, we are certainly making very good progress in continuing to move both NPAs and NPLs down. We did have a slight push-up in the second quarter on NPLs. Quite frankly, that came from a very thorough review of our portfolio, specifically our leverage book. So we had a few credits that we moved into the NPL category as a result of that review. We were very pleased overall, however, with the review and the quality of the book once we went back and reconfirmed it. But the overall trend and the guidance we've given both on NPAs and NPLs projects that we continue to see opportunity for further declines through the end of this year into next year. We're working that very carefully. We're very pleased with the results to date, and especially with the decline in NPAs in the second quarter. So there's still room for improvement.
On the commercial deposit side, you know, I would say that the increase that we have seen is related to core growth, our existing customers and relationships. It's difficult to judge how much of that core increase is related to the excess liquidity that they have. And But clearly in this LCR environment, our focus is on LCR-friendly core commercial deposit growth. So, but, you know, there is clearly a segment of that increase that is related to excess liquidity. Jamie, I don't know if you have any additional comments on that.
Yeah, I think the nature of your question is just getting at, you know, how are we modeling deposit behavior for what potentially could be a rising rate environment. And one of the things, you know, we continue to do is reevaluate what occurred in 2004, which was the last time we entered a Fed tightening cycle. And, you know, for us, you know, three significant differences with how we model deposit behavior going forward versus what we actually experienced back then. One is we currently assume no lag in increasing deposit rates, whereas back then you certainly had a lag in how the industry responded to rising rates in order to restore historical deposit spreads. Second, we have a higher level of absolute betas assumed today than we did actually experienced back then. But then finally, to your point, we do assume significant runoff in our certain deposit classes, and you know, wholesale DDAs is one of them. So we do model fairly significant runoff, and yet after you know all of these conservative and prudent modeling, we still are asset sensitive and pretty comfortable with how we're positioned.
That is really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Ken Houston from Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Go on, Ken.
Kate Boone, to your comments earlier about expenses, understanding that you're anticipating a sub-60 efficiency ratio, this is the second quarter where you guys have done really well and relatively well compared to expectations on core expenses. Yet we see a reduction in the fee guidance and no further reduction in the expense guidance. So I'm just wondering what those moving dynamics are between you know, revenues expenses in terms of, you know, the delta in pre-pre, and what are the drivers of incremental expense growth that you wouldn't be able to adjust against the changes you're making on the fee outlook side?
Yeah, just to reiterate the outlook is, you know, for the entire year and is reflective of sort of the realized changes in mortgage and in corporate, and mortgages. Clearly, it's been affected by a little bit higher amortization in the MSR line. So as we look forward to the remainder of the year, we still believe that we're going to do a good job with non-interest income in different fee categories. We have very strong expectations as we updated payment processing. IA continues to be strong. And corporate banking, I think, is going to be strong as well. It's clearly been impacted by low volatility and certain sensitive line items. The expenses, there are some, you know, seasonal changes from Q2 to Q3. You know, the marketing expense typically ticks up in Q3. There are some, you know, the impact of known amortizations from previous capital investments in IT, et cetera. Remember, we're continuing to invest in the company. You know, we're not stopping it. But clearly, what I would tell you is whether, you know, we achieve it in a given quarter, if we do see significant changes to revenues, you know, we do actually act and we make sure that our expense line does not necessarily across the revenue growth pattern. So all I can tell you is so far we've done a good job in adjusting our expenses based on revenue trends, and some of it obviously has been impacted by important decisions. Exiting the broker channel was an important event that impacted the mortgage line of revenues. But I can guarantee you that the focus on expenses is very much high on our priority list. We believe that, you know, when you see our numbers going forward, we will continue to prove that it's a high priority item.
Okay. And my second question is, you know, the automobile loans line has been now flatlined for several quarters, and understanding the competition and the spreads that are out there, you know, flushed out against the fact that SAR industry sales are continuing to go up every quarter. Can you just talk about, you know, originations versus pay downs and where you stand on desire to grow that business?
So let me give you a couple of data points with respect to production. Last year's Q2 2017 production was $1.6 billion. I think this quarter it was $1.3 billion. That's down from $1.4 billion in Q1. We are being very careful in putting to work our shareholders' equity in that business line, and we're trying to find the best balance between getting the right profitability and the right credit profile. The business continues to be very competitive. The payoff performance is really not much different. So what was the impact of the outstanding volumes is really more due to changing production patterns. Our first goal is to book profitable loans. We're not going after volume, and we will not change that approach. We've done a very better job the last 6 months compared to the previous 6 months in achieving a better spread in that business, and we kept the credit profile and duration profile of that business fairly stable. So we're pleased. We're not complaining that origination volumes are slightly down. But we will continue to look for opportunities, and when it's time to increase production, we will do so, but it has to be done on a profitable basis. We're not going to just do it to show, you know, higher loan growth.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Mike Mayo from CLSA. Your line is now open.
Hi. Your lower guidance for fees and pre-provision net revenue, is that solely due to the reduction in mortgage that we've seen so far year to date?
Largely, yes. I mean, there's some drop in corporate revenues that are more, again, sensitive items. Interest rate derivative volume was a little bit less than we expected. Our investment advisory business is doing well, a bit below because we're moving that business from a transactional focus to a stable growth in asset management. But in general, Mike, it's more reflective of what's happening in mortgage than anything else.
And is the forward guidance indicative of everything you've seen so far year to date, whether it's the investment advisory, the mortgage broker channel, or the MSR write-down, or is that also more subdued expectations when you look ahead?
It's more reflective of what we've seen.
Okay, so there's no real change in the forward outlook except that it starts from a little lower base.
That's about right, yes.
Okay, but if a lot of this is due to the mortgage broker channel, why wouldn't you have known about this guidance after first quarter earnings? I mean, what's the new information here?
I think what's happened was that the change was a bit more abrupt than what we expected. The MSR performance clearly, when you compare, just when you look at Q1 numbers, our hedge gains were a little bit higher in Q1. Moving production away from brokered mortgage also impacted the amortization of the asset itself, as new originations were a bit lower than we expected. So it's a combined effect between what's happening to the servicing asset as well as the origination.
Sure, but wouldn't you have known about that amortization change since you knew in advance you were moving product away from the broker channel? Or was there something that was missed, or the rates changed, or something changed, right?
Just remember, going back to the earlier part of this discussion, somebody asked, you know, what we thought about the housing activity on origination levels, even excluding the broker channel. We put on less in our servicing portfolio than we originally anticipated due to the subdued housing activity. So we thought that the purchase activity would be higher even just based on our retail channel.
Okay, but as it relates to mortgage, really the damage has been done as reflected by this quarter's results.
We believe that we will have a fairly flat performance in mortgage for the remainder of the year, yes.
Okay. Switching gears, so what were second quarter revenues from the deposit advance product?
About $30 million.
$30 million. Okay.
That's gross revenues with, you know, that's a gross number.
And what was the net?
I don't have the credit numbers in front of me, Mike. We can update.
Or even ballpark. I mean, I'll take a, you know, it's a bigger than a bread box sort of answer here. We're just trying to size this.
It's just about a bread box, probably.
You can buy a lot of bread boxes for $30 million. So, I mean, what sort of loss rates do you have on this product?
Mike, I don't have those numbers with you, but it's a small number. It's not a very big number.
Okay, so this is a big nut to swallow here. I mean, either you mitigate this or, per the prior question, you'd lose $120 million in revenues per year. Is that too draconian, simply take $120 million off the top starting day one of 2015?
I believe that's too draconian. Ultimately, the outcome will depend on the transition period and also the replacement of this revenue stream. But you know, as we said in our opening lines, you know, the revenues will be considerably lower. But you know, taking the entire amount out, I think.
And what sort of efficiency ratio does that business line have?
A very low efficiency ratio.
Okay, so it's pretty low. As far as your buybacks, shares were reduced by 1%, but you didn't redeploy the Vantiv gain, so should we assume maybe the pace of buybacks picking up here in the next quarter?
Yeah, I mean, they should. It's more of a calendar issue, Mike. It's, you know, we will obviously resume our activities as we get out of our blackout period, so it's not indicative of a change in pattern. And we should see a pickup here in the activity this quarter.
When does your blackout period end?
Hey, Mike, it's Jamie. The more important thing is the current ASR expires at the end of July.
Yeah, so it's difficult to have two ASRs at the same time in the market. You know, you can do it, but our blackout period started with our board meeting in mid-June, and it now is over with this earnings release.
And just to follow up on that, at what price level does it make sense to buy back your stock? I mean, up to what price or what sort of parameters do you use for that?
So far, we have focused on share buybacks as a systemic return of capital to our shareholders, and we have refrained from necessarily acting based on day-to-day, month-to-month stock movements. We always believe that our stock is a good buy. And so far, you know, when we look at the IRR in the last 2 years of us buying stock, the performance has been very good. We will continue that approach. We still believe that our stock is a very good investment. And at this point, you know, we are not necessarily being guided by where the stock price is today.
Sure. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from Terry McAvoy from Stern Age. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks. Just one question left on my list. You had the Vantiv gain in the second quarter, and I'm not connecting in any dots, but you also had the land valuation adjustment, so you made a decision to look at the value of the land. I'm just thinking about the litigation reserve. Was that something that could have been taken in future quarters, much like the land valuation adjustment, or was there something specific in terms of conversations or something that is event-driven that was behind that charge?
Terry, these are totally independent events. The litigation reserves are tied to activity that we see during the quarter and what we have in front of us. The land valuation, that's, you know, we look at that you know, every quarter. So none of these are tied together. These are all independent decisions that we've made based on, you know, the facts that we know as of today.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this does conclude today's conference call, as we have reached our allotted time. You may now disconnect. Thank you.